Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents The First Time Manager's Guide to Team Building by Gary S. Topchick, narrated by Matthew Josdahl. Introduction. There are a lot of managers out there who have not realized the great advantages of team building. They see themselves, rather than their team members, as the focal point, the most knowledgeable, and the decision maker. This book does not buy into that philosophy. Its major goal is to show you how high-performing teams can be a tremendous advantage to the team manager or team builder, the team members themselves, and to your organization. The First-Time Manager's Guide to Team Building will tell you how to create and maintain a high-powered, results-oriented team that will get the job done. You will develop the skills needed to become a successful manager of teams and discover innovative ways to make your teams more productive. The First-Time Manager's Guide to Team Building begins with a description of what a team is, compares the four different team models, and tells you how you can get your team to the highest levels of team performance. It then tells you how you can successfully go from being an individual contributor to a manager of teams, by developing a new set of skills and avoiding the roadblocks along the way. Then it leads you through the critical 10 steps to team building. These steps, if followed, guarantee immediate success in your team building efforts. The book then tells you how you can build team spirit by focusing on the 5 competencies that all high-performing teams possess: clear roles and responsibilities, open, honest communication, a supportive, knowledgeable team leader or manager, decision-making authority, and rewards and recognition. You will also learn many new strategies for managing challenging team situations, such as how to hold teams and team members accountable, deal with difficult team personalities, and move your teams from conflict to collaboration. The book also contains many team-building activities, such as the original game, the unsighted square, and team temperature. These activities develop a team environment and a team culture, enabling a team to perform at the highest level possible. The book concludes with how you can use class to build your teams. The First-Time Manager's Guide to Team Building is written in a conversational manner, making it easy for you to follow along and absorb the ideas. There are many practical examples and case studies that highlight the points being made. You'll find it easy to refer back to specific areas when specific concerns arise in the future. I highly recommend that you listen to the book several months after you have started building your teams. And please share the book with your colleagues so they will be able to build their teams as well. The First-Time Manager's Guide to Team Building is also extremely valuable for experienced managers of teams. It will remind them of what they used to do, which they may need to do again, or will confirm whether what they are currently doing is on the mark. But our focus will be on the first-time manager or team leader. There are many books on the subject of team building, but few of them focus on individuals such as you, new to managing and new to building a team. First-time managers are not interested in a lot of theories and studies. They want to focus on the practicalities of developing a team that performs well. That is what we will zero in on in this book. My major purpose in writing this book was to give you some satisfaction from building your teams. Thanks for spending some time with the First-Time Manager's Guide to Team Building. Part 1. The Team. 1. The Best Team Experience. I often begin my team-building sessions and seminars with a great exercise that pinpoints what makes for a really good team. I give the individuals present, who consist mostly of current managers and team leaders, or those about to move into these roles, the following task. Think of the best team you have ever worked on, or currently work on, or unfortunately, if neither applies, could imagine working on. A minute or two later, after they have thought about the assignment, I ask them this question. What about that team made it, makes it, or, in your fantasy, would make it, such a great team? I usually get a great quantity of answers, and the answers always correlate to what first-time managers need to do to build their own high-performing teams. There are certain characteristics and behaviors that get repeated time after time. The list often looks like this. Characteristics and behaviors of the best team experiences. The right people on the team. A great team leader or manager who really cares about the team. Fun, enjoyment of the people and the team experience. Enjoyment of the work the team is responsible for. Clearly defined common goal or goals. Ways to measure successes or results. Accomplishment of team goals. Celebration of successes. Rewards and recognition when goals are met or exceeded. Performance accountability. Clearly defined roles and responsibilities for each team member. Strategies for handling challenging team members. Ability to make decisions freely. Clear directions and specific time frames. Availability of the resources needed for success. Open and honest communication among team members and between the manager and the team. A team leader or manager who works across department lines to get what is needed for her team. A vision of how the goals of the team tie into organizational goals. Mutual support among team members. A team leader who teaches the members how to work as a team. Interdependence. When I ask my seminar group members what specific teams they were thinking of, when I ask them to think of their best team experiences, I get a huge variety of answers. It seems that these best team experiences exist in every type of industry, in both for-profit or non-profit organizations, in governmental agencies, and in every part of the world. Sometimes they are sports teams or community-based teams. Here are two sad notes that I must report, however, about this best team exercise. First, about 20% of the responses to my initial question have to do with a fantasy team. Unfortunately, there are many managers and team leaders who have not had any best team experience. I hope that will change when they manage their own teams. Second, more people have had bad team experiences than positive ones, and they have had more bad team leaders and managers than good ones. It is also interesting to note that when I ask the opposite question, as I sometimes do, think of the worst team experiences, I get the opposite answers to the characteristics and behaviors of the best team experiences list. Building team spirit. The definition of team spirit is pretty close to the definition of a team. Team spirit is the willingness and the ability to work in an interdependent fashion, where any team member needs to rely on other team members to accomplish the work or the goals of the team. Over the years, I have taken this best team experience exercise one step further. I have asked thousands to select 5 items from the characteristics and behaviors of the best team experiences list that they think are the most important or have the highest priority for building a team. Consistently, I get these 5, but not in any particular order. 1. Clearly defined roles and responsibilities for each team member. 2. Open and honest communication among team members and between the manager and the team. 3. A supportive and knowledgeable manager or leader. 4. Ability to make decisions freely. 5. Rewards and recognition when goals are met or exceeded. These 5 are among the most important elements to building a team spirit, which, in turn, builds a high-performing team. So, a very important question for first-time managers or experienced managers to ask themselves is, Are these five characteristics of team spirit prevalent in my teams? If they are not, what can I do to make sure they are? 2. Defining a team. Defining a team. Teams are groups of individuals who accomplish designated objectives by working interdependently, communicating effectively, and making decisions that affect their work. They often have a certain level of autonomy, and they develop procedures for accomplishing their goals. Ongoing training in both technical and team skills are also a hallmark of a team, as is the team leader or manager getting training on how to manage and lead a team. Teams have a common purpose or goal and a clear mission statement of that purpose. They know what their desired results are, and they can measure their progress toward those goals. A team's goals are aligned with the goals of the department and/or organization, and team members have a very clear understanding and appreciation for how their efforts meet the broader goals of the organization. Team size. There is no ideal team size, but in general, and there are always many exceptions, most successful workplace teams tend to have between 5 and 10 people. When a team is too small, there are not enough people to get the work done. When the team gets too large, communication and decision-making are difficult. Imagine a group of 12 or 15 of your friends trying to decide where to have dinner. The same thing happens in teams that are too large when they need to have decision-making discussions. Larger teams tend to divide naturally, or are purposely divided into smaller groups or sub-teams. This increases the time it takes to communicate, make decisions, and get the job done. Ongoing teams and project teams. There are two major types of teams, the ongoing team and the project team. The members of an ongoing team stay together indefinitely. People who work in the same department or unit, such as a manager and her staff, are an example of an ongoing team. In most companies, you will have many ongoing teams, such as the IT team, the marketing research team, and the accounts payable team. Project teams, on the other hand, are formed for a particular purpose. They usually disband when their mission is accomplished. Often, project teams are cross-functional. That is, the group members come from different functional areas in the organization. For example, if an organization wanted to improve workflow among 5 different departments, the team members would probably come from each of these 5 departments, as well as from other areas of the company, such as engineering, human resources, or organizational change and development. Ongoing teams usually have team members with the same status or title, except for the manager, who is a level above. This is often quite different on project teams. I have seen project teams composed of individuals at many different levels. It would not be unusual to have a couple of vice presidents on a team with others who are 2 or 3 levels below in title. I always find these mixtures fascinating. I have seen programmers or research scientists, for example, advising senior managers on what has to be done. Because these senior managers do not know as much about particular technical issues, they have to rely on their team members. That is what a team should be all about. Knowledge and experience should be valued more than titles. So many benefits. There are countless benefits to having teams or a team-based organization. Let me just mention a few. First, most people prefer working on teams, and if given the opportunity to do so, will perform better. Second, individuals on teams find their work more meaningful and rewarding than those not on teams. Third, teams enable organizations to use their people, their number one resource, better, thereby getting much higher returns on their investments in teams. Fourth, many teams become so effective that they can work without direct management support, This sense of autonomy is an incredible motivator for many team members. Fifth, sometimes a team can become so effective that it makes up for the fact that the team's manager is ineffective. Sixth, teams have the power of synergy. It is a proven fact that teams generally make better decisions than individuals. This results in more innovative, better solutions to problems. All in all, these are some very strong reasons for having teams. Who should the team leader be? Some organizations put a subject matter expert, SME, in charge of a team. Someone who has the technical knowledge, but not necessarily the team leadership skills. By team leadership skills, I mean the ability to communicate well, motivate people, facilitate discussions, make decisions, resolve conflicts, listen, deal with difficult team members, etc. A big mistake that these organizations often make is relying on the person's technical skills to lead and manage a team. They definitely are not enough. It is just as important, and sometimes even more important, for the manager to have great team skills as well. The same holds for first-time managers, who may have been promoted for their technical skills and not their team skills. Just because they were good technically does not mean they will be good team leaders or builders of teams. A developing trend in many organizations today is to assign or hire individuals with great managerial, leadership, and team skills, and have them acquire the technical knowledge over time. Generally, I think it is a fine approach. However, the organizational culture and the team members must value these skills, and not believe that the only way one can be a very good team manager or leader is to be as technically proficient or more technically proficient than their team members. Who should the team members be? The opposite of what I just said about team leaders holds true for team members. When forming a team, especially a project team, the individual's skills, knowledge, and experience should be the number one criteria for team membership. Then it is the responsibility of the manager, team leader, or organization to help develop each member's team skills through team-building training programs. Never put people on a team just because they like one another, get along with each other, have similar personalities, or because you want a mix of different personalities. This approach will most likely backfire. Here's a true story that brings out the point. I was once working in a company where the CEO had just returned from a 2-week executive leadership program. As part of the program, he was exposed to a particular personality instrument and immediately became a devotee of it. When he returned to his company, he had each employee, about 300, take the instrument. Then he reorganized all of the teams so that each had at least one person of each personality style or type on it. The CEO's strategy turned out to be a disaster. Many of the teams no longer had the SMEs needed to perform the work, even though they had a nice mix of personality and behavioral styles. Productivity and profitability soon dropped. I do not want to give the impression that other factors beside subject matter expertise are irrelevant when hiring individuals or assigning them to teams. Other factors, especially experience working on teams and attitude toward teams, are vital. I am just saying, once again, and this is a key point, that knowledge, expertise, and ability in the team's subject matter should be the top priority. You should definitely ask certain questions before hiring staff members or putting them on a team. If someone says he would rather work alone, or that she does not see the value of teamwork, then, if you have a choice, don't put that person on a team or employ them in a company that values teams. Are you really managing a team? A group of people working together is not necessarily a team if it does not fit the definition of what a team is, especially the key part about working interdependently. Often, people in the same work group, unit, department, etc. call themselves a team even though their interactions do not match the definition of a team. Developing a team, in the true sense of the word, is very hard work, and the responsibility lies with the organization, the team manager or leader, and the team members themselves. 3. The four team models. There are four different ways you can structure, organize, and manage your teams. These four ways, or team models, have different communication and decision-making styles. As a first-time manager, you need to decide which model best fits the people you manage, the nature of their work, and the culture of your organization. Before we examine the four team models, let's briefly discuss the three factors that determine the best way to set up a team. The three factors of team life. There are three major factors that you should consider when deciding on how you need to structure your team's communication and decision-making. The first and most important factor is the current subject matter expertise of your team members. Are they highly, moderately, or not technically skilled? To what degree can they learn and develop? Can they work on their own and interdependently with others? Or do they need lots of direction and training from you? You also need to look at their current level of team skills, sometimes called interpersonal skills. Are they able to communicate effectively with one another, listen to different points of view, motivate one another, come up with a consensus decision, and deal with team members who challenge the group process or do not do their part? Or do you have to take the lead in all or most of these areas? The second factor of team life is the nature of the team's work. Some types of work lend themselves more to one type of team model than another. For example, in some work environments, each team member may have a specific job to do independently. Or because of the nature of the work, each team member may have to make his or her own decisions without consulting any of the team members. In other work environments, the opposite would be true. In order to reach a goal, the team member needs to work with others or needs the help and assistance of others. This is where interdependence comes in. The last factor to think about before deciding which team model would be best for you is the culture of your organization or department. Some organizations or departments encourage two-way communication between managers and their team members. They want managers to ask team members for their thoughts and opinions, and they respect and value those opinions. They view their team members as having an integral part in determining what needs to be done in order for the team to succeed. Other organizations communicate in a top-down fashion, where managers make the decisions. In these cultures, team members are expected to do their work, and do it well, but they are not expected to get involved in much decision-making. The managers like to run the show, and that message is constantly communicated to their team members. Obviously, there are many organizations that lay somewhere along this continuum, from more participative work environments to more controlling ones. A big part of being able to work well within your organization's culture is to take into account your direct manager's philosophy and beliefs about teams. Often, he or she may have a somewhat different approach than the organization's. You need to be very cognizant of that. In order for you to succeed in your new role, you will need to know what your manager expects from you. The three factors of team life are closely interrelated. You cannot consider one without the other two. Let me give you a very common example of what I mean. The case of the incongruent factors of team life. You have a highly technically skilled team that has mastered team skills as well. The nature of the team's projects calls for the members to work interdependently. So far, I hope, you are thinking that you can have a high-performing team here. You have a team that can basically work on its own with a little direction and support from you. However, The culture of your organization basically dictates that managers make the decisions and monitor the work of all team members very closely. So, what do you do in this case, where there is incongruence among the three factors of team life? In this example, you would consider the environment you work in. You cannot completely go against the organization's culture if you want to be successful within that organization. However, there may be a way to advocate a different managerial strategy as long as you get the results the organization demands. As the leader of your team, you need to try to convince management that what you believe is best for your team would in turn be best for the organization. One of the most difficult aspects of managing people and teams, and creating high-performing teams, is not having all three factors of team life aligned or congruent. Which is the most important factor of the three? I am sure that at this stage you are well aware that you have to consider the nature of the work that your team does, the culture of the organizations, and the team members' level of subject matter expertise. However, many first-time managers only focus on the latter. On one hand, that could be a big problem, but on the other hand, it's the right thing to do. The most important factor in developing a team to its highest possible level of performance is generally your team members' current level of subject matter expertise. Ideally, that factor, more than the other two, determines the approach you take to team building, but we can definitely not forget about the other two. Descriptions of the four team models. As you hear the descriptions of the four team models, think of the team or teams that you currently lead or will be leading in the future. Which model comes closest to yours? Is it the best model for your team's current situation? Would a different model be more effective? And keep in mind the three factors of team life when deciding which model works best for you. The work group. Dennis is a new manager of a large computer chip manufacturing company in Austin. He moved into his position a few months ago from another chip company. He inherited a group of six. Dennis had never managed before, but looked forward to working with his group. Dennis assigns each person specific responsibilities and meets separately with each member weekly to monitor progress. He also holds update meetings with his entire group, where he shares new information and answers questions. Dennis makes the decisions, and the group members have come to accept them. So far, they have had no complaints. Dennis considers himself to be very successful with his group and enjoys his job as their manager. The group members like one another, and there is little conflict among them. However, there is very limited interaction among them during the workday. Each member has his own work products, and work-related communication is almost always only with Dennis. He has asked his management for feedback on how he is doing, and they have all responded favorably. The Developing Team. Riley is a new sales manager for a line of industrial products used in the tool and die industry. Her region is the southeastern United States, and she has 10 sales reps reporting directly to her. She was promoted from within the group of sales reps, and her former peers are now her team. It took them several months to get over the change, but they now fully accept Riley as the boss. Riley talked with her team members about how they felt about her taking over, and how difficult this change must be for them. She also explained how she planned on leading the team and what her expectations were. In order to make this change work, Riley also had to change her own perspective. She had to identify with being a manager now and could no longer see herself as one of the sales reps. Each of Riley's sales reps is responsible for his own geographic area. Riley communicates with her reps at least two or three times a day to see how they are doing, to avert any potential problems, and to give advice and suggestions. She always listens to their concerns and ideas. Once a month, the sales reps and Riley meet in person. Sometimes, due to scheduling conflicts, not all of the sales reps or Riley can meet face-to-face. When this occurs...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?